Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. I'm the Recruiting Animal coming back to you from the Wild West of recruiting cyberspace. Yes, I'm the king of the new frontier. Hey, do you think I could get the Kennedy family to back me on that score? That's right, friends. There's going to be a little politics on today's show. But first, I'm going to remind you that at 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Maureen Sherub, the queen bee of telephone sourcing, the naughty lady of Shady Lane, will be airing her telephone name sourcing show with her pal, Pam Simon. It's called Talk Sourcing. You can call in with your telephone sourcing problems, and she's going to give you free advice. They're going to give you free advice. But right now, I want to bring you to issue number one. I got an email this week from a first-time listener, and he must be a really nice guy, because you know what? He sent me a whole lot of detailed instructions about how to run my show. Thank you, buddy. I'm going to read it to you. He starts off with rule number one. I won't read you the whole thing, just rule number one. Animal, capital letters. Quit asking yes or no questions. You'll get better answers when you hold on. Quit asking yes or no questions. You'll get better answers. And for the love of Mike, animal, let your guests get a few more words in before you cut them off. Your show, he says, has some potential, but it's more funny when it's not trying to be. Hey, thanks, you big genius. I don't know what I would do without advisors like you, let me tell you. And listen, all of you critics who keep telling me to shut up and let the guests talk, I got something to tell you. The guests can't talk, at least not very well. And if I can tell the guest story better than the guest, why should I waste your time trying to drag it out of them. Did you hear me? Listen, isn't it better if I just put the information out there myself and get them to say yes or no? Really, if they've got something to add that's worthwhile, I'm not going to stop them, but they don't. They can't. And I really have to wonder, do you really want me to become just another run-of-the-mill radio host who abandons you, my fans, to the bland and boring statements of people who don't know how to give a good interview? Of course not. Of course you don't. So, yes, I'm intrusive, and I'm intrusive with good reason. Listen, for the more intellectual people out there, let me put it like this. The purpose of art is to make everyday experience significant. And you know as well as I do that ordinary people are boring. But what I do is make them significant. That's my job. And if you don't like it, change a channel. Issue number two. Now, some of you might know that this show has a LinkedIn group associated with it. And yesterday, I was looking over my spread. There's 400 members. I was looking over the membership, and when you're a member of one of these groups, you display the group's symbol beside your name. So I'm looking over the members, and I see a lot of people have the symbols for Job Machine and 6 Degrees from Dave and the Human Capital Institute right beside their names, but then I notice something. Where's my little puppet face? That's the icon for my group, a little picture of my face. And I mean, these guys are in my group. Some of them have been guests on the show, and they don't have the guts to advertise their affiliation with me. I had to ask myself, what's the problem? I'm Canadian? Well, I got a message for you guys out there in Recruiterville. A little prejudice isn't going to keep a guy like me down. I'm the king of the new frontier. And one day, those people who are embarrassed to say they know me now, and those who shun me now, and you know who you are, trust me, those guys are going to be saying, see that little puppet over there? I know him. He's my friend, and I'm a member of the Recruiting Animal Army on LinkedIn. That's true, my friends. You wait. You ain't seen nothing yet because I'm the recruiting animal, and this is the Recruiting Animal Show! Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Hey, who's here today? Anybody want to introduce themselves? 949.
Hey, 949 is Jeremy Langham.
Jeremy, what's the name of your blog? You've got a new blog.
Yeah, it's called the Executive Talent Sourcing Blog, and the address is executivesourcer.blogspot.com.
Okay, 512, who are you? Chicken, that's who you are. Okay. Area code 781. Do you want to talk?
Yeah, it's Sam Medalli.
Hey, Sam Medalli!
How you doing?
I'm okay. I have you scheduled for a little later, but I'll tell everyone right now. Sammy Medalli is a guy, he's a headhunter, and he's got a new group on ERE called Interviews with Hiring Managers. Am I right?
That's right.
Okay, so we're going to come back and get a lot of suggestions for your new group from the geniuses who attend my show. Can you wait a few minutes till we do that?
That'd be fine.
Okay. One sec. 720, it's got to be Dave Mendoza, the king of the recruitosphere.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, what's happening with that girl who wants to attack me for being a bad American?
She's waiting for the date.
Okay, I'll give it to you after the show. Now, then there's a blank. There's nobody there. It's got to be Maureen Sherub who's hiding her information as usual. Is that right? No. Okay.
That's me.
Yeah, okay. Well, figure. Now, whenever I see a big blank, I figure out it's got to be her. The Naughty Lady of Shady Lane. Her show's coming on 1 o'clock. 212. Is that the Kingfish, Dave Manister?
Yes, it is.
Welcome to the show, Dave. Welcome as always. Area code 513, last person. You want to say hello? Another chicken.
That's Cincinnati.
Maybe it's one of your relatives, Maureen.
Maybe okay. It's Amy Beth. She's in Cincinnati.
Oh, Amy Beth has a guts to say hello. And JD, Jason Davis, is here on by way of MSN Messenger. Hi, JD. A shout-out to my friend at recruitingblogs.com. Did I mention everybody's sites? Dave Manister, ERE.net. Anybody else want to plug something before I go on? No? Okay, I'm going to plug something. Shally Elvis Steckerl has a big event on March 5th in Sunnyvale, California. He's calling it the Sourcing Jam Session. And, oh, what was that? I can't remember. Dave Mendoza, is there anything you can add about that? Dave, it's your friend. Shally's your friend. You want to say something for him?
It's an absolute essential for everyone in the Bay Area.
Okay,
I hope everyone's there.
Thanks. It's March 5th, Sunnyvale, California.
Wait. I got a plug.
Jobmachine.net, that's where they sign up, right?
That's right.
Okay, now I told you I want to talk about politics a bit.
Animal, you forgot something.
What's that?
Your friend JD.
I mentioned my friend JD already.
Did you throw
the plug
the
party?
Party
if you get a chance. I'll let Dave Mendoza do that. Dave, do you want to plug that party?
Next week, Jason Davis throws the party that only he can throw on Thursday, February 28th at 8 o'clock, MGM, the Terrace Suites. If you have an invitation, I sent
MGM
them out.
What?
Today.
The hotel in Las Vegas, is it?
That's right, with the view of the Strip. It's going to be beautiful.
Okay, and during the daytime, is that the Recruiting Roadshow with Papa John Sumser?
Papa John will be the day prior on Wednesday, and the next evening, the day after, on the 28th, Thursday, will be Jason Davis's Recruiting Blogs Party, Recruit Fest.
Okay,
cool title.
And just for the sake of Papa John, recruitingroadshow.com is his site, right?
That's right.
And all this info's there as well?
It will be, and everyone should receive an invitation from either myself or from Jason Davis today.
Okay, great. Now let's move on. Okay, John McCain, he's the guy I want to talk about. I mentioned it last week in my discussion with Michael Homula. He accused Mitt Romney of being a manager and not a leader like himself, right? Does anybody have a comment on that? I think he meant that a leader has a strategic vision versus a tactical vision. I think it's baloney. Mitt Romney's, he's jumped, he's dumped, he's he's got out of the race, but his fans said any leader is also a good manager, or any, you know, good manager is also a leader. They're interchangeable. Anybody want to say something about that before I go on? Dave Manister, that's a question for you.
I don't have strong political opinions.
It's not political. It's about being a leader versus a manager. Okay, I'll let you pass on that. Maureen, anything before I move on?
About McCain?
No, about leadership versus management. You guys just go off on tangents, don't you? Okay, moving on. Bad-tempered boss. Now, John McCain is a guy who likes to use the F word a lot. I don't know if you guys know it, or also the asshole word. I can say that here now because that professor wrote a book about no assholes. He likes to call people, he says, you know, any asshole could understand this. F you, you've got no business. I know effing more than anybody in this meeting. That's how he talks. One of his people he called a name like that said, I don't want to put that guy anywhere near a trigger. Must be a Democrat. Another guy said, well, he made up to me. He apologized as soon as the meeting was over. And another guy said, well, you know, we have cordial relationships anyway. I tend to think a bad temper like that is bad for a manager. Does anybody disagree and that a bad temper should preclude someone from becoming a CEO or a president of a country? Don't jump in all at once.
I think some of the greatest CEOs have terrible tempers. I mean, Steve Jobs is right now, he's the golden boy. I mean, that guy is notorious for being just a total jerk to his staff.
And how does he succeed then, Dave?
He's smarter than everyone else in the room.
What does that mean?
He cares more about the product. He understands his product. He has more creative drive. And somehow, in spite of the fact that he's an asshole, he seems to get the best out of the people who work for him.
Keith, how does that happen? How does he get people to stay with him? The product rather than his personality? Or they see the personality as just part of the package?
I wish I knew.
Okay. Okay, next question. Okay. You know what? Last thing. This guy, John McCain, last thing about him. Sorry, we're going on. I don't think it's so bad attention, but a few months ago, I remember reading an article. He had no money. You know, he was expected to sign off of the presidential race. Now he's got a shot at becoming president. Is never say die a good rule for everybody or just some people? Annual panel doesn't have much to say. Okay, I'll pass on that. I'll put it out just for the people who are listening later on to mull over as they go through their day. Maureen,
Michael,
here's...
I think it's a good rule for everyone.
Yeah, well, how do you know when you're really on the wrong track? I mean, Mitt decided he didn't want to put, like, another $35 million of his own money into the race.
Mm-hmm.
So there comes a point when you know you're fighting a losing battle, right? You don't want to throw good money, literally, after
well,
bad.
There comes a point when you have to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
You shouldn't talk about throwing babies out, okay? You usually have one on your lap now whenever I'm talking to you.
Yeah, I have her on my lap right now.
Okay. Can you talk into a regular phone so I can hear you?
You make me do this, okay.
Okay, Maureen, I'm going to hear, you know, I'm dragging the show down now. I like to get
okay,
it off to a peppy start. Maureen wrote a posting this week in which she talked about some guy who wrote a book for women in business, and he's going to open up the heavily guarded alpha male playbook. Listen, are there any women dumb enough to believe that there is such a playbook? You're more alpha than half the guys I know.
He's dedicated himself to women.
Any guys on this panel believe that there's an alpha playbook that some men know about and some don't? You know what those women should do? Go get testosterone shots and see what happens.
Did he say some men don't know about it?
He didn't say anything. I'm saying no men know about it. There's no such thing.
All men know about it.
Okay, there's a new radio, another plug for somebody. Like, I don't know why I'm going to plug them, but the Chad and the Cheesehead have a new monthly radio show. And I don't know why they're not calling it Ham and Cheese or, you know, something funny like that, but they're on once a month. I don't know what it's about. Haven't heard it. Anybody else got any input on that?
I listened to it. It's pretty good.
Oh, it's already been on. What did they talk about?
They take 10 topics. Their goal is to talk about each one for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
They went way over this first time, but
mm-hmm.
You know, they're two smart guys, and it's always interesting and fun listening to smart people discuss.
How smart would you say they are on a scale of 1 to 10? 10 being really smart.
I think they've been around the industry for a long time, and I think they know their stuff.
That's a beautiful evasion. You must play hockey.
No, you want a straight answer? They're both very smart guys.
Okay.
I think they both have agendas coming into things. You know, so, you know, there's a lot of complaining going on about Monster and stuff like that. But, you know, they're both really smart, and, you know, I got a lot of value out of the podcast. I thought it was really good.
Okay, give us one thing that you got value about Kingfish. Dave?
You know, they just listening to them talk, I was entertained. Trying to, you know, I wasn't really listening to the podcast with the intent of dissecting it later on, so I can't really point out, like, one or two things. But hearing them talk about Indeed was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing them talk about... I think that was actually the one thing I thought was the most interesting in the podcast, was kind of listening to them dissect the permalink issue, which I personally see as a non-issue. But
I don't know what it's about. Should we discuss it now or pass on it? Go listen to the radio show if you want to know about permalinks. Thank you, Dave. We're moving on. This is not their show, but I am going to plug all the other radio shows that I know of. There's Stan Relihan from Australia. ExtremeRecruiting.org is Bill Vick. Chris Russell from Job Boarding used to have the podcast. Jimmy Stroud and Karen Matinen have Recruiter's Lounge. And Amy Beth Hale, I know, appears on Recruiting Life now and again. Now, I want to talk about irresistible offers. Is Harry Joyner on the panel? But no, he's not here. Okay. Now, Netflix. Harry wrote about Netflix, and he said they have the most irresistible offer or formula since Domino's Pizza came up with 30 minutes or your pizza's free. We'll deliver it in 30 minutes. They said Netflix has convinced 7.5 million subscribers that their local video store is too far away and that late fees are evil. Harry elucidates the reasons for success. He says, number one, it agitates pain. Number two, it's simple to understand and believe and remember. And number three, it's easy to tell others about it in 3 seconds or less. So last week I was talking with Mike Homula about establishing rapport very quickly in your cold calls to candidates. Doesn't sound to me like we can, you know, present those irresistible offers, but there is a way to make your offer, I don't know, explosive. Anybody got a comment on that? No? Any headhunters on the line? Sam, are you a headhunter?
I'm a headhunter.
What do you say about that? How long does it take you to establish rapport when you make a cold call to a potential recruit?
Depends on what that person's doing, but okay. Within a few minutes.
A few minutes. So do your cold calls have explosive power?
Yeah.
They do?
I'm calling about an opportunity, and... I'm going to get that across to them very shortly and get them excited or get them very interested or else move on. I'll give them some extra time to open up if they're reticent, but I come across pretty strongly.
Okay, so is it easy to deliver your message, not in 3 seconds or less, but let's say 20 or 30 seconds or less? Is it simple to understand, believe, and remember, and does it agitate pain?
Yeah, I can do it within 30 seconds.
Give us a sample. Do you have one that you're using now that you can give us?
I don't have one that I'm using right now, but a very good one. I did the CFO for a large multi-billion-dollar corporation, and I would call up CFOs at other companies and basically say, this is what I'm doing. Would you have an interest in learning a little more? And most people would say yes. Because
okay.
The opportunity was
okay.
So good.
Okay, that is not like 30 seconds or 30 minutes or less or late fees are evil. We'll talk about that another time. Anybody else have any interest in that before I move on? Sam, I told you it's a bit rough on the show. Don't start crying. Anything? Anybody else want to say something?
We had an interesting dilemma this past week. We've been profiling quantitative analysts.
Oh, yeah.
In London.
Yep.
And usually when we profile, you know, when we profile, all we're doing is we're just gently introducing the opportunity, and we try to set up that second call between the recruiter and the candidate. Well, calling into these were major banks and financial institutions in London. These people were really reticent about talking to us, and I couldn't figure out if it was because we were calling from the U.S., and I think that had a big part to do with it. I had an interesting discussion.
Is there a point here, Maureen? I got an audience.
Okay, go on and move on.
Thanks. Thanks. You know what? I just want to riff a bit. You guys always accuse me that when I'm talking about networking, I'm really talking about dating. Not true. But is there something about delivering those hot messages in recruiting, the irresistible offers, and picking up somebody on the street? People don't do that here. I hear in Europe they do it. But making quick contact with somebody. I'm thinking of something in particular. I used to have a friend, and his brother blew into town one day, his brother who he doesn't get along with, who actually he always believed that the brother was the result of a mother's affair because he didn't look like anybody in the family. But this guy, this rogue brother, the black sheep of the family, every restaurant they went to, he picked up the waitress for a date. If they went to a bookstore, he arranged for a date with the girl at the cash, a smaller bookstores. So this guy had some kind of gift of presenting those irresistible offers. He wasn't bad looking, but there must have been some. I think it's just having a certain kind of patter and knowing where you're going. Does anybody consider themselves a sales expert who understands how those things work, whether in the romantic field or in recruiting or in some other way, get enrolling people very quickly into your sphere of influence?
You know, there's a guy online. His name's David D'Angelo.
Yeah.
And he teaches you how to pick up women.
More than one of them. Yeah. Well, so
there's more than one, probably.
So you know.
But his stuff, I mean, it's really interesting. I read it for the sourcing tips I get out.
Okay. So what does he say? Give me one thing.
Let's see. What's his tagline? Does anybody know it? It's you know, you got to sass these women just, you know, to the right amount. You have to play hard to get just to the right amount. To get them interested in you.
Okay, thanks, Maureen. That's real good guidance for us.
you tell us, Michael. How do you do it?
No, I'm not a pro. Listen, I'm going to go back to politics a bit. You know, I had a case a few times. I was working for a very large national retailer. Won't mention the name. I was working with another recruiter. It was his client. They're also in the States. They're very huge. And I was recruiting financial people for them. All of a sudden, we were on the verge of a few placements there, and the media, the Toronto Star, had a couple of big articles about it, and a few days in a row that, you know, they might be purchased by another company, etc. All of our placements went south. It was very disappointing. So I think you can be blindsided or sideswiped by the media. But I noticed in the political sphere that Barack Obama's been getting hit by some of the liberal columnists.
Wait a minute, Michael.
Yeah?
You weren't sideswiped by the media. You were sideswiped by, you know, did they have conversations with another company about being acquired? You were sideswiped by the facts on the ground. Something happened.
But it was reported in the major media.
Right, but it's not the media's fault.
I'm not blaming it on the media.
The situation
Dave,
changed. The
Dave,
situation
you want to attack me, at least give some substance to your attack. There's nothing there. Let me finish my little story, and you'll tell me if I'm way off base. Barack Obama was on 60 Minutes the other day saying that he's taken the higher ground. He's not like the Clintons, really. He doesn't want to do personal attacks. Paul Krugman in the New York Times, an ultra-liberal columnist, he attacked Obama for saying that those guys are very offensive. They've got a cult of personality that they claim to be more moral and better than other people, and they don't hesitate to take shots at other people. Doesn't seem to have bothered the campaign one bit at all. So I'm wondering, I don't know what I'm wondering. I'm wondering how come Obama hasn't been hurt by the media where me, the recruiting animal, was hurt by the media. Dave,
you, the recruiting animal, were not hurt by the media. You were hurt by the fact that your client had, you know, was talking with another company, and that made people nervous.
That's an interesting subject. Why does that make people nervous?
Well, they might lose their jobs.
Change makes people nervous. If you're going in somewhere, you're going to make good money, and you know, you're just going to start out there. You don't want your company changing and layoffs to happen in the near future, your manager to change, and you don't like the person you're going to be working with. You want to go in, you want to know what you're getting into.
Exactly, Dave. Okay. I'll pass on this. You guys
That's
really,
what happened, Michael.
Yeah, that is what happened. But how come it happened with me, but not with the guy who might be president? Okay. Anyway, I don't know. What should I talk about? You guys aren't really, you know, hot today. What about this? Here's a good topic, booth babes. Maybe Jeremy Langan wants to talk about it. I read sometimes an SEO guy or a blog. He's a blog consultant. His name is John Chow. And he said the best way to get traffic is to go to trade shows, take pictures of the women who are at the booths, the trade show booths. He calls them booth babes. And then put pictures of them on your blog. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't think you want to put pictures on your blog, but I'll comment on Booth Babes. Because I was at the last E3 show that they actually were using Booth Babes to get people to stop and take a look at the video games or the movie or whatever that they were selling. And it worked. I mean, it worked for all for that demographic. And I think the bigger overarching point is that you want to have something that's going to catch a person's eye on your blog, or if you're reaching out to them on a headhunting call, that you're going to relate to them, and they're going to feel that there's something, some sort of sizzle behind the steak. And I think that's very important.
Sizzle behind the steak. Okay. Whatever that means, Jeremy, why wouldn't the Booth Babes on your blog be attractive? Dave, you've got an exposition. Yours is essentially a trade show in some ways. Were there lots of good-looking Booth Babes in there on the floor there?
There's always good-looking people at the ERE Expos. I wouldn't call any of them Booth Babes. I think HR and, you know, which is what the ERE Expo is all about. It's about HR and recruiting. I don't think that the culture of the industry and of the profession is really one that Booth Babes works for.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people would be insulted in this particular industry.
Maureen, would you agree? Is it sexist to put up pictures of Booth Babes? Would you be mad if I put them on recruitingbloggers.com?
I could never be mad at you, Michael.
Okay, thanks.
Anything you do is
anybody
fine.
Else want to talk?
Michael, as far as pictures go, I mean, you could definitely sex sells, and you could definitely get a lot more people to come to any site with provocative pictures.
Yeah.
It just depends on what your goals are. I mean, who are these people? Why are they coming to your site? They're not coming to buy anything. They're not coming for a new job.
Okay, is a booth babe really? Would you call that provocative?
We've had booth babes.
Yeah, of course it's provocative.
Bloggers.
If it wasn't titillating, Michael, if it wasn't sexy, why would people?
Okay,
be
eye candy. Let's get Dave Mendoza in there. Dave, you go to all the shows. Are you sleeping now?
Michael, you put booth babes up on recruiting bloggers. Who are you kidding?
I've only had one woman, Miss 604. She's a Canadian blogger, and she puts real sexy pictures of herself. She's married on her blog, and she got a job from her blog.
Really?
I don't know. I'd be happy to put them up. Okay, next topic, immigrants versus Gen Y. There was an article by Margaret Wente. She's a local columnist in the Globe and Mail, Canada's national newspaper. She was on a committee for Rhodes Scholarships. They were assigning Rhodes Scholarships. There were 11 contestants or candidates for these scholarships. 9 of them were the children of immigrants, people who were not from Canada. And a lot of them actually were from Soviet Russia. She said immigrants work harder. They know that they're coming from someplace where there's nothing. They really appreciate what they can get here in Canada or the United States. And so all this crap about Gen Y being more productive and than their parents, you know, that's baloney. Anybody want to comment? I'll just add one more thing. I was reading a blog. Somebody sent me an email. I won't mention her name. She started a new website. She said, I'd like you to comment on it for me. So I went there, and she's a Gen Yer, I don't know, 23, 24, maybe even not that much. And she said she was having an argument with her mother, who's a chartered accountant. And the mother said, you know, she was criticizing her mother for working too many hours. The mother said, wait till you get a job. And she said, no, it's not going to be that way for me because Gen Y is so much more productive. That is so ignorant and arrogant, and these immigrants prove Gen Y wrong. Any comments?
You know, somebody talked about arcing before. This arcs back to entrepreneurship, that they say that immigrants, too, make up a larger part of the entrepreneurial population for the same reason. They have nothing to lose.
Okay. I'm going to actually go through.
Hey, Michael.
Yes, sir.
Have you ever read The World is Flat?
No. Oh.
The World of What is Flat?
By Tom Friedman?
The World is Flat, yeah.
Okay.
It's amazing. It's an amazing book, but there's one part of it that's just particularly striking, and he goes to China, and he's, you know, he's talking over there with students, and to them, you know, the culture there is such that Bill Gates is like Britney Spears is here. He's the person that they're all talking about. He's the person they want to be. He's the person that they're all just like, wow. He's cool over there because he made it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here we don't have that culture here. We're celebrity obsessed, but you know, it's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, I know you're telling me something, Dave, but I don't know what it is. But I will comment.
They're hungrier, Michael.
Okay, I will comment. I saw last night on television here, The Agenda with Steve Paikin, a woman named Jan Wong. She's a reporter for the Globe, Globe Mail again. She used to be stationed in China. And she was actually, she went to China in the 70s. One of, you know, her university professors encouraged her to think that the Cultural Revolution was the greatest thing since sliced bread. So she went over there, and now she's a China expert. And she believes that Chinese people have a business-like culture, just in general. She says that the people who come from the countryside to work in the city really work hard to accumulate capital, then go back to their own towns and open up restaurants or factories or their own little businesses. She believes that certain cultures are mercantile cultures or business. They have a business element in them. So there's also a theory. I don't want to go on too long. I read it by, an American conservative columnist. I can't remember his name offhand, and it's about middleman cultures. Chinese are famous for this, or Indians. They'll go or emigrate from their own country to a place like Indians in East Africa or Chinese in Malaysia, and they have, some kind of business savvy, and they will set up businesses. Everyone hates them, but the because they make more money than other people, but they can't, but the economy can't do without them, and apparently that's typical of Uganda. They kicked out, Idi Amin kicked out the Indians. I know I'm going way off. Harry Joyner.
You know, can I say something?
Yes, okay.
All right. You all know I used to sell businesses. And
yes.
When I would, Orientals, when they would come to buy a business, financing was not usually a problem. They would borrow from within. They have an interesting credit. It's kind of like a credit lottery, where whoever's willing to pay the highest interest gets that amount of loan from the community for, you know, whatever period of time it's open. And I always found that interesting about their culture.
Well, you know, that's I'll send you that article. I'll post it on recruitingbloggers.com. 678, is that Harry Joyner? Have you joined the show?
Yes.
Okay. Did you hear that I was talking about you a few minutes ago?
No, I was on a conference call.
Okay, I'm going to go back. There's someone else whose number is blocked.
Did Kasivari call in?
Pardon me?
Did Kasi Pasivari call in, the guy from Finland? Is that what I missed?
No. But there's someone else who's called in. Is it like Maureen, blanking out their number? You're welcome to introduce yourself if you want to.
Must
I'm
going to
give
sorcerer.
That person 2 seconds.
Must be a sorcerer.
Yeah, must be a sorcerer. That must be for your show, one of your people. Harry, I'm going to backtrack. I hope you're going to add a little pep to this group, because if it wasn't for Maureen and Dave, they're not jumping in. But what I was talking about was the explosive power of irresistible offers. You talked about it, about Netflix, on your blog. Just like Domino's Pizza, 30 minutes or your money back or whatever it is, you said that the Netflix has convinced 7.5 million people that their local video store is too far away, that late fees are evil. You attributed it to... It agitates pain. It's easy to understand, believe, and remember, and it's easy to tell other people about very quickly. Am I right, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, how does that translate into the work recruiters do in cold calls? How can we give our cold calls explosive power? I'm dying here today, Harry. I'm counting on you to save the show.
Okay, so what the recruiter should do is make sure that their URL and their unique selling proposition and the customer's needs are in complete alignment with one another, right? So, for example, I'm a mile deep and an inch wide in a couple of functional areas. One is e-commerce. So when I'm calling e-commerce executives, I say, my name is Harry Joyner. I'm on the internet at ecommercerecruiter.com. I'm an e-commerce recruiter. You're an e-commerce executive. That's it. It seems very,
okay,
very
so you use the URL, the easy-to-understand URL, is something that's easy to tell others about very quickly, easy to understand.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
it's
remember.
Self-evident.
But,
yeah.
But
it's
what about agitating pain?
Well, the agitating pain part comes later. And the best way to agitate pain, and by the way, you're taking a Netflix direct-to-consumer example, and you're applying it to professional service selling, right? So executive search is a completely different sales process, selling DVDs online or pizza in 30 minutes or less, or it's free. But the basic psychology is the same, right? So the idea is that once I've spent enough time on the phone with a candidate or an executive, I know some things about them, right? There's a list of 10 questions, and they're not written down anywhere, but in my head I know to find out, what does the person fear? What makes them mad? What are their top three daily frustrations? Are they logical? Are they emotional? What's keeping them up at night? And then based on that, I can build my selling agenda.
Okay.
Or my selling
I promised in the introduction that I would interrupt people, and I'm going to interrupt you. What you're saying, and this will give a little credit to Sam Medaille, what he was saying before is that you can't translate sales techniques from one business sector to another whole hog. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's very situational.
But
right?
There are elements that can be used, right?
Yes, and understand this. Everybody, right, and across the board, people love to buy, but they hate to be sold. So if your tactics are sound, they can't fight you, right?
That's no, I don't understand.
Well, basically, you have to make it easy for people to see what's in it for them by getting involved with your product or service. But you can't just sell it to them. It's not like, you can't just ram
sales
pitch down
somebody's throat. But what means they can't fight you? What does that mean? They can't fight you.
For example, if you're controlling a conversation with the right questions, if you're asking them what's important to them in a new career, for example, if you're asking them about the three F's, fun, future, and finance, and basically you are helping them see your opportunity through their lens, then those are sound tactics, and they can't fight you because they won't fight you because it's their level of appreciation. For example, I think brunettes are beautiful. You might think blondes are beautiful, right? And so if we're talking about women and you tell me how beautiful you think blondes are and I'm trying to – this is a really crazy example, but,
not that crazy, is it, Maureen? We've been talking about babes the whole time.
Okay, well, so let's say that, we're talking about renting a certain DVD or whatever. I'm likely to, present you with DVDs that might have blondes in them because I know that would be more resonant with you, right? So, I mean, it's all about figuring out with certain questions what's important to the person.
Okay. Let's switch. I asked before as well, Harry. I'll give you all the questions. I asked about, is there anything similar between picking up a boy or a girl at a bar or on the street or wherever and cold calls in recruiting? There has to be some magnetic power in a quick relationship building or rapport building technique.
You're looking for a hook.
No, I think that if you're happy and and you sound like you're glad to be there, and you sound like you're a lot more interested in developing a relationship with the person than just a very transactional sort of, quickie interaction with them, then you're a lot more likely to get the quickie interaction.
So you mean that's all you need to pick up a waitress when you go to a restaurant?
Well, your interest has to seem sincere.
Okay.
Hey, animal, I
human
another...
This isn't sales. This is just human nature.
Uh-huh. Hey. Somebody else want to talk?
Yeah, animal.
Who's this?
This is Jeremy again. I think another key differentiator between picking up somebody on the street corner and cold calling a potential executive is that there is a ton of research that happens right before you pick up the phone, internet research, et cetera. And when you're picking up someone on the street corner, you're obviously, unless you're a stalker, you haven't done that research. So when you get someone live on the phone, you already know two or three talking points that you can relate. I mean, you don't want to creep them out, but you can have associations that are in common or past employers that are in common.
You know what? I don't know if that's true, Jeremy. An interesting thing, but look at Maureen. Her business is names generation. How much do the recruiters she gives those names to know about those people? They know the company they work in. They hopefully know that they're in a certain line of business, but they don't know anything about them. I've been in that position a million times where I'm hoping the person is related to the position I'm looking for, but I really don't know much about them until I get them on the phone, right?
Yeah, it only takes a couple of minutes to look somebody up, and I think that's an important step to do before you just...
Not everybody's on the Internet. I don't know. You Internet sources think that, like, everything's there, right? Well, it depends what level you're recruiting at, if you're only recruiting CEOs. But I see what you're saying, sir. Okay. Anybody else want to comment on that? Harry, anything else?
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I got my entire point across. Did
everybody... Go ahead. You finish.
No, I just...
I want you to finish.
Does anybody have any questions?
Okay, next question. I was wondering if cell phones are really a good cover for schizophrenia. I was in Starbucks this morning. Typing away there for the show, and a guy walks in shouting to himself, right? And I thought he was totally nuts. And then I realized he's got one of those earpieces on for his cell phone, but maybe he really wasn't talking to anybody. That was my second thought. Any comments on that?
Yeah, there's a really funny Larry David episode about that.
Okay, thanks. Thanks.
What, you don't watch Larry David up there in Canada? Curb Your
Enthusiasm? Yeah, I know what it is. Okay. Okay, anything else? Do you want to go back, Harry, to finish off your point? Should I let you?
Yeah, no, that's okay.
I'd like you to finish.
No, my feelings are hurt. I'm going to go cry in my beer now.
Okay. Listen, I'm going to talk about you again. Venus de Micro, Heather Hamilton, wrote about your buddy Robert Scoble. Here's what she said.
He's not my buddy.
Well, it was ironic, okay? Here's what she said. I'm really sick of hearing about Robert Scoble tech blogging with insanely heavy doses of ego doesn't appeal to me. The me of blogging style he invokes, it's hard to read his opinion on things because he seems clouded by self-interest. Now, Heather, you know, I had to wonder. She's a college football nut. So it made me think she's a real team player. Scoble left Microsoft, so she might be mad at him for that reason, for jumping ship, and that resentment is expressed there. But somebody want to say something about that?
Yeah, Seth, I don't believe it. I think you're wrong.
You think, what do I think?
I think you're wrong, flat out. I'm going to fight back.
Go
Today's
ahead.
Today's the day.
Go ahead.
I just think you're wrong.
About what?
I don't think she's mad at Scoble for leaving Microsoft. Are you
okay.
out of your mind?
Microsoft's
the freaking Death Star. They got, what, 70,000 employees up there? Scoble leaves, big whoop.
Okay, she's a team player, okay? But,
yeah, but that
my
was
point...
2 years ago.
Okay, my point is that Robert Scoble was mean to Harry, our friend. He told everybody to make Facebook your new Rolodex. Harry took him seriously, tried to upload, I would say it was kind of crazy, 4,000 people to Facebook at one time. They gave him the boot, and then his buddy, his mentor, Scoble, said they did the right thing by banning Harry from Facebook because Harry was a spammer. He was using spam techniques. And then this year...
Time out. Are you saying that Heather actually said all this on her blog?
No. I'm saying that I like to see Scoble get a little kick from the queen of Microsoft blogging because he had it coming for what he did to you. But not only that, poetic justice. You're interrupting me, Harry. Scoble himself got kicked off Facebook for some kind of antics that he was doing. And that was right. I'm lost now. You took me off my score. You want to say anything about that? I mean, do you feel good that he got kicked off?
No, I don't care. You take that whole thing, you're making a mountain out of a molehill. Sometimes I think that's what the recruiting animal does. You're an agitator.
Yeah, well,
you
I'm not agitating enough today. I don't think the show's that interesting so far.
You're just out there rattling people's cage.
Yeah,
that's
okay,
your
listen.
Deal, animal.
Okay. Everybody can comment on
Queen
this.
Queen Bee, do you agree with what I'm saying or what?
No, I don't agree with what you're saying. But, hey, who's area code 203? Just signed
Michael?
In.
Michael? Michael,
area
right.
code
you are an agitator. You are an agitator.
Area code 203. Do you want to say hello?
That's Connecticut.
Okay. Another chicken. Okay. So, listen. Here, there was a big test. They
Who can blame them, Michael?
They gave these kids, students, pictures of professors. They showed them lecturing, 2-second film clips of the professors lecturing, and asked them to grade the professors. The kids came up with gradings for the professors that were the exact same as the ones the students gave them, the students who actually attend those lectures. So the idea is that a very minimal exposure to somebody, like a microscopic, let's get you can still assess that person. There's certain factors that come through that allow you to assess them accurately. They also showed, these psychological researchers, they showed the students pictures of CEOs from the top companies on the Fortune 1000 and the bottom companies. And they asked them to grade them for competence, dominance, likability, facial maturity, whatever that is.
Oh, God.
And trustworthiness. Now, these grades that the students gave, and they were very ignorant students, Gen Y, I assume, they couldn't recognize Warren Buffett from anybody else. Their grades showed a direct correlation with the success of the firm. For instance, if they gave someone a high grade, that person was at the top of the Fortune list, and the other people who they gave lower grades to were at the bottom. So I'm thinking, and there was one other thing. There was a survey of senior managers who were rating their own CEOs, and there was no correlation at all between what they said about their CEOs and the person's the success of the business. So these ignorant assessments were far more accurate than those of educated, well-informed people. So I'm thinking that must have a profound implication for the assessments we do of our candidates. Any comments on that?
I thought that was a fascinating study.
Yeah, I'm glad you thought so. Do you have anything to contribute, Maureen? Dave Manister, what do you think?
I don't really have much to say about it.
Sam, you called in. Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Do you have something to say about that?
I'll ask
a question. Does it mean that we really should meet people, or that we should maybe have our secretaries, the receptionist in the office, assess them? Keep an eye on the guys while they're, you know, in the waiting room, and then you tell us whether we should place them or not.
No, I think you really need to talk to someone. It helps to talk to someone in person, but I've placed people and I've never even met them. So,
but I've heard savvy recruiters say that they talk to the receptionist who sat there and watched the guy for 15 minutes sitting on the couch waiting for the recruiter to come out. And they listen to what they say.
You know, you're interrupting, Sam.
Because she sizes them up. She gets an idea of what they're all about. I don't mean to interrupt, Sam, but I just wanted to get that in.
Sam's first time on the show. You're going to scare him away. Do you have something else to
say? I'm not going to scare Sam away.
Do you want to say something else, Sam?
I just want to go back to one point. I usually like to get involved in a conversation, a dialogue with someone when I first call them. I don't like to hit them up in the first 30 seconds. If I tell them I'm in executive search and I'm president of such and such a company, they know why I'm calling, and I want to talk to them for 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes and then set up another time to talk. Once I've established whether they're interested or not. So I don't do something within 20 seconds.
You're not a Domino's Pizza of the recruiting world, in other words,
no,
right?
No, I don't do that at all. It doesn't work. You have to get someone's interest, and by doing that, you have to engage them in a dialogue, in a conversation. Then they're honest. Then they're open. I've had a lot of people over time open up about their aspirations, what they'd really like to do, things like that, and it turns into something good. But a 30-second spiel doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm. What if you say, listen, if you don't like my offer within 30 seconds, I'm going to send you a $5 Starbucks card?
But that's not the kind of recruiter I am.
I think they're $20 minimums.
Okay. No, they're not. You know what happened? I told someone that he was going to get a traffic ticket. I was sitting at Starbucks.
Oh, they're $25 minimums.
I was looking out the window at Starbucks, and these guys who give parking tickets come out. There's lots of people who stop to get their coffees. And I told this guy, I said, you know, you're going to get a ticket if you don't go out to your car. And the next day he came in and gave me a $5 Starbucks card. There you go.
Well,
okay.
In the U.S., it's a 20. Maybe that's only online.
Yeah, I guess, you know,
online.
I'm in another country.
I had a guy call me yesterday, and this is interesting, and he caught my attention. He said to me, he said, I want you to think over the next couple of days what it is you'd like to do in your life, one or two things that you would most like to accomplish, and I'm going to call you up, and then I want to help you accomplish those. And that really struck a chord with me. I mean, I've been thinking about it ever since. So
what was his
use
business?
Those lines, Michael.
Career coach?
Do I want to be a career coach?
What's his business that he called you up on?
What was he doing?
He was a writer. He's a writer. I don't know a lot about him. He's also a
Did he want to go
recruiter.
On a date with you? Was that it?
No.
Okay.
He just wanted to help me.
But that sounds
I think
like
he wanted
a good
to
technique.
Help me. I thought it was a good line. What?
Okay. That sounds like a good pickup technique.
It caught my attention.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else want to say something before I move on?
No, my 1 o'clock meeting showed up early, so I got to go.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Well, this was just an incredibly stimulating recruiting animal show.
Thank you.
And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And that's all I got to say.
Oh,
about
I didn't
that.
Tell. There's a Marketing Head Under show. It's going to be posted soon.
We'll
okay.
see you next week, Harry.
Bye, Harry.
Bye,
Have
Harry.
A nice meeting. Listen, everyone, what about foresight? Guy Kawasaki, everyone knows who he is.
Brutal.
Pardon me?
You guys are just brutal.
Yeah, okay. Beat it.
You didn't take beat it. It didn't take you 2 seconds to get rid of me. Not
you said you're leaving.
Leaving.
I mean, all what right. do I? There's people listening to this show.
We can move right on. No, who's listening to this show?
I don't know, but I send out links now to 400 people who are members of the Recruiting Animal Army on LinkedIn.
All right. Well, then what does that mean? That means it's me and the Queen Bee and, you know, Dave Manister.
Yes, okay.
For now, but people listen in.
And 397 other people. Listen, if you want to answer this question, Harry, you're welcome to. Guy Kawasaki says it's impossible to have seen for anyone that Facebook, Google, or Yahoo would have been good investments. Now, there's a guy who is a venture capitalist. He should know. He said it's almost impossible to have good foresight. And speaking of Starbucks, P.J. O'Rourke, he said a friend of his, when he got out of school, from business school, in the early 90s, his company sent him to check out Starbucks in Seattle to see if they should get involved with their IPO. In 1992, the friend said he went into a Starbucks, he felt as if he was in some kind of weird living room where hippies, who suddenly made a lot of money, bought too much furniture, he didn't like the look of the place, he didn't like the people hanging around in there, he didn't like the price of the coffee, which was $1.60 at the time, and he didn't like the coffee itself, so he sent a memo to his boss, this will never fly. What does that say about people who claim to have strategic vision? Anybody want to comment?
Well, what it says is never say never, learn never to say never.
Okay, what about the other people who are on the panel today? 949, is that Jeremy Langens?
Yep, I'm still here.
Do you want to comment on that?
Well, I mean, strategic vision, that's kind of a fluffy way of saying that we're good at guessing. And I think you can get a track record in a certain domain and be good at guessing in that domain. So, yeah, it's possible. But guessing whether Starbucks was going to be good or not, you know, that guy didn't guess right. Maybe someone else did and got rich off it.
But what about Facebook?
You want to know my own opinion on Facebook?
No, I want to know if you said someone could have seen it coming. It's great success.
I think there are people that could see Facebook coming along. You know, you saw $1 billion.
So you disagree with Guy Kawasaki. Just want to put that on the record, right?
I disagree with him.
Of course there's people who saw Facebook coming. There was investors in Facebook.
Exactly.
They thought that there was potential. They put money behind it. I mean, they might have been the minority, but they turned out to be right. People make mistakes.
Okay, Dave, look at it this way. Have you ever heard of Jean Dixon?
No.
She was like a seer or astrologer or something. She claimed, it was in the papers a lot over the years, she claimed to have foreseen the Kennedy assassination. But it turned out that she predicted everybody was going to get assassinated. Sooner or later, you're going to hit a home run, right? And then you forget all the negative history. So just because someone invested in Facebook, it doesn't really mean that they had foresight. They just happened to get lucky.
No, they had foresight because they actually put their money. They wouldn't just open their mouths and say, hey, you know, I think Facebook is going to be awesome. Everyone should get on it, which means nothing. They invested millions and millions of dollars, which, excuse me, they would not, well, at least in theory, they would not have done unless they thought they were going to make more money back. I know I wouldn't have done it unless I thought I'd
Okay, Dave, I don't know. You're not a recruiter, but if you were hiring someone who claimed to have, you know, good strategic vision, how would you test that?
How would I test it?
Yeah.
Hire some. Well, how would I test for, you know, it's beats me. I mean, I hire people that I sit down with and I kind of find a rapport, and when I ask them questions, they seem to have intelligent answers. You know, I've gotten it wrong myself a few times on my own team. You know, I've gotten it right, hopefully, you know, I think more often than I've gotten it wrong.
For strategic vision, or just in general?
No, just in general, I can't say that I hire for strategic vision. I mean, we're a very, you know, execution-oriented company.
Okay. Now, Sam Medalli, you still there?
Yep.
Sam, this relates exactly to what I wanted to talk about with you. You started a group, a discussion group on ERE, Dave's site. Maureen's also a discussion leader there. His new group is called Interviews with Hiring Managers. Sam Medalli wants to know what industries people are interested in hearing from in terms of hiring managers, what it would take to get people involved. You can't get people involved. That's one thing I'll tell you right now. Number two, number three is, I guess, what kind of questions they want to hear. Is that, am I right? Is
Sam?
What's good? I posted an interview with the senior vice president of Bank of America.
Yep.
And not one person wrote back and said, tell me more about the jobs that this guy has announced. Sam, he's a personal friend of yours. Not one person took the interest when business was announced to get back to me personally or get back to the group. And the same thing with the other people. And they're good interviews. And
they're very good interviews.
Yeah, and so it's, and I have actually have had some people leave my group because it's not filling their needs. Someone from Citibank wanted to learn more about the banking industry, and I can't argue with everybody, and I can only do so much. But all I know is that there are a lot of passive people out there who do not interact when they get good information.
Yeah, that's right. Tough luck.
Frustrating. It's frustrating,
tough
isn't
luck.
It, Sam?
That's how it is.
That
now,
is how it
I didn't I read somewhere on one of the marketing blogs that 1% of people comment. Or no, 1% of people actually do what you do, get actively involved, either post blog entries or start a discussion group. 10% of people comment. Which sounds like
I'm not convinced it's 10%.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
And the rest are just readers. They're busy.
Mm-hmm.
That's your job, to just give them stuff to read.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Manister, comment on that? You've been looking at that kind of stuff for years, longer than anybody. He's gone. Anybody left there?
I'm here.
Okay. No, I just thought maybe I lost the connection.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess everybody...
Hey, Animal, I'll comment on commenting.
Go ahead.
This chair again. I think you can really see who are. You were talking about strategic vision people, and how do you figure out if someone has strategic vision? Well, go and kind of look through the comments that they've put it up on different websites, and see if they're getting at something. See if they're hinting around about something, or see if they're kind of vetting some of their thoughts or ideas in their head. Out in public, and that way you can figure out if someone's trying to be strategic or trying to have vision.
Yeah, the way you ask someone for strategic vision in an interview, you have to ask them just what they've done before. That's the only way.
Yeah,
but,
you have to look at their track record.
Okay, but what Kawasaki is suggesting there is that lots of these things are just wild bets. I know Dave said otherwise. We didn't get into it in depth. Interesting topic. But also the questions that Sam.
Yeah.
You have all the questions. Thank you, Jeremy. The questions you want to ask people, you know what you want to ask, right?
Yeah.
How recruiters can reach you, that's like how they relate to recruiters. That's like you asked that one, right?
No, I asked them. I ask the people I'm interviewing, how long have you been involved in hiring? I want to establish their expertise. What qualities do they look for most in candidates? What kind of recruiter do you look for? I've got some interesting responses.
Yeah, give me a few more questions. Don't brag anymore. Come on.
What's been the toughest recruiting issue you've ever faced? Are you currently looking to hire? If so, what kind of recruiters would be interested in hearing from you?
Uh-huh.
What's the best way a recruiter could contact you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you prefer email? How does a recruiter capture your attention? Are there any other issues that you'd want HR and recruiters to know about you as a hiring manager?
And have you seen any common patterns? I know you haven't been at it very long.
No, there's different responses, but if you read all the interviews, you get a really good idea of what hiring managers are going to look for. And I hear these hiring managers condemn a lot of recruiters because they spam them, they do all the wrong things, and a lot of these people who do all the wrong things are on ERE. And what I don't understand is why some of these people might not write back in and say, can you find out more about this so that it can help my business?
Okay, just tell us in closing, what are some of the wrong things?
Well, one of the main things is that one hiring manager says when a recruiter spams me to death with a candidate saying this is the perfect candidate and spams me to death. Another person who's a managing director at a $250 million company says he needs recruiters not to sell candidates but to bring hireable candidates. And then the rest is about personality. So he doesn't want someone spamming or selling to death. And I guess in some respects that's the difference between a contingency recruiter, some of those people, and a management consultant, which is a retained recruiter. So that's my take, and I'm learning as I go.
Okay, so last
isn't that
comment.
A cool idea for a group, Michael?
Yeah, it's terrific.
His interviews.
Yeah, time's up on this show. I want to get last comments for everyone before we go into Fox Sports.
You said we could bring subjects up, but you never let us bring anything
you
up.
You guys
Michael.
Never bring anything up.
Well,
a couple of us have tried to bring
things up.
Okay.
All right, next time.
Next time I'll be happy for you guys to bring things up. Now, Pam has just signed in. It's going to be time for Talk Sourcing. Jeremy, do you have any parting, statements or predictions or anything you'd like to say?
Jeremy, are you going to stay for Talk Sourcing?
No, I've got a phone screen in about a minute.
Okay.
Executivesourcer.blogspot.com.
Thanks for that. Okay. Sam Medalli.
Yep.
Parting words, join your group.
It would be good.
What's the name of it?
Interviews with Hiring Managers.
At ere.net. Spell your last name so people can find it.
It's Medalie.
And how do you say it?
Medalli.
Okay. Thanks for coming. You're welcome to stay for the Talk Sourcing
It
show.
Has like 320 members in less than a week. I've never seen a group grow so fast.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
None of them want to talk to him. Wonder why. Okay.
they just want to soak up my information.
That's
He's
right.
filled it, and they are coming.
Yeah.
It always takes a while for the community to gel around a new group.
He's right.
Okay.
He's right.
Sam, you're welcome to stay. If you have any questions, you can ask Maureen about telephone name sourcing. Do you know who Maureen Sherib is?
I met her once.
Oh, he met you, Maureen.
Yeah.
Sam
Maureen,
knows who I am. He's one of my students.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Maureen and I, we have a red phone. We're
oh, okay. Yeah, the bat phone. Okay. Dave Manister, thank you. Any predictions, anything you'd like to say, any critiques on the show? I'm getting a lot of negative comments. You want to say something bad about me?
I never want to say anything bad about you. I think you're being a little too hard on yourself about the show.
It was very interesting then, right?
I thought it was interesting.
Okay, great.
I don't think it was the best show. I think it was solid.
Was it as good as ham and cheese?
It's totally different vibe. This is a talk show, with call-in guests. That's just the two of them talking.
Okay.
Are there any other shows
totally
that have call-in guests?
Totally different kind of show.
Yes. Okay.
Are there any other shows that have call-in guests? One last question.
No.
This is the only show that has call-in guests.
I'm the king, Maureen. Come on. I know
Isn't
it already.
I'm just
you
trying
to
establish
me.
That because I keep bragging about that for
yeah.
you.
Yeah, okay. Who's area code 513?
Nobody cares. That's Cincinnati.
Okay, that person doesn't want to talk, but you're welcome to make a statement if you want, or maybe he's just hanging around or for your show, Maureen. Pam, you don't get to say anything yet, but you can say hi.
Hi.
Okay, here we go. Oh, that ended quickly. Hold on. Welcome to Talk Sourcing, everybody. The show about telephone sourcing with Maureen Sherib and her protege. Is it fair, Pam? Pam
yes,
Simon.
That's fair.
They're going to answer all your questions about telephone sourcing, and if you don't call in, I'll play the dummy and I'll ask them all the questions in your place. So I'm going to open the floor before you guys say anything yourselves. Maureen, I'm going to open the floor to see if anyone asks any questions. Anyone want to talk about telephone sourcing with Pam and Maureen? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. No. Maureen, do you want to make any statements? Or Pam, do you want to talk? Do you have any little speeches to make about telephone sourcing?
Well, what do we want to talk about?
You never tell anybody your URL.
Our URL. We'll do that later. Michael, what do you want to talk about today? Last time we talked about phone banks. Do you have something you want to talk about?
I'm just going to continue where I left off, but I'd like you to make a statement. I'd like you to tell everybody who you are and if they want to contact you after the show, where they can find you.
All right. My name is Maureen Sherib, and I'm a telephone name sourcer. I've been doing this for 12 years, and the company name is TechTrack. com, and you can find it at www.techtrack.com. There's no C in the track. And our phone number is 513 800-899-9628.
And if these guys are recruiters, they're listening to this show, and they can't find any candidates for their assignments, all they have to do is call you, give them a description to you, actually, and you'll find people for them. Is that right?
Yes. Give us a description, the job description, and a list of target companies. From there, we can help.
Actually, why don't you start off there? Pam, is that all right if I ask Maureen a question?
Absolutely.
You guys, why don't you tell us what you need from people who call you if you want to, if they want to get the best out of you, what do they have to provide you with?
That's a very good question. There are two documents I send to new customers. One is the Help Me Help You document, which is basically a checklist of information that I need to receive from them in order to get their job set up and to get it started. One, I need the job description. Two, I need a list of target companies that they would like us to go into to find people. If they don't have a list of target companies, I can help them build that up. But I need to know where it is they want me to go. Three, I need to know how many names they want us to get. I recommend 30 to 50 names on most searches. There are some searches that will require more, areas like pharmaceutical, biotech, the Big Four, anything in the Big Four, SAP. We're working a SAP job right now. You may need 100 names to get one immediate hire. But on most jobs, 30 to 50 names will generate one immediate
hire.
Okay,
I've got an immediate question for you.
Go ahead.
I discussed with other people before, and I've never had a chance to ask you. If somebody calls you up, tells you they need a certain kind of person, you're name sourcing. You're not usually doing pre-screening of the candidates.
To a degree,
we are. Not usually.
I understand you're doing something in England right now for quants, right?
Well, we have two levels of service. Our first level is our name sourcing service, where we provide for a dollar amount per name, $45 per name, we provide the name, the title, and the person's phone number. We try to get a direct dial or an extension number. If we cannot get that, we get the main number where the person is located. And then we have a second level of service, and that is called our profiling service, where we contact each of the names that we identified in our name sourcing service, and we pitch the opportunity gently. Now remember, most of these people are truly passive candidates. The first thing they say to us is, I'm not looking for a job, or two, how'd you get my name? So we go, oh, we get past that, and we pitch the opportunity gently. We try not to draw any lines in the sand. Our goal is to get 10 or 12 questions answered that the customer wants to see about that person and to set up a second call between our customer and that potential candidate. We charge an additional $45 per completed profile for that service, and a completed profile is one in which most of the questions are answered. It's not always possible to get every question answered on that first call, especially salary questions, because it's a little premature.
Right. And the other thing is that by getting a profile, it's pretty much showing, you know, that this person might be open to get receiving the second call.
Okay.
It shows an interest.
Okay. So here's
now,
the thing.
Now, but let me state something. We charge regardless if the person says they're interested or not.
If you get a profile,
we get a profile and they take the time to answer our questions, there's interest on some level.
Right.
And
okay.
That person becomes part of the customer's pipeline, if not today, maybe tomorrow. And some of the people will say to us, well, I'm not looking right now. Most of them will say, well, I'm not looking for a job, or how'd you get my name? Remember I said that. But they will say, well, you never know what the future holds. What do you got?
Okay. So two questions. First off, you said you supply the name and the title. That's not always going to give all the details if the person is working in the right sphere. They might be a programmer, for instance, but they might not be doing the programming of the exact kind that you're looking for. Let's say,
that's a good question, Michael, and that's one reason why we want a specific list of target companies. And choosing a list of target companies is half the battle, because if you choose your target companies carefully, if you choose your target companies that you know have these that people in it doing this type of programming, we're going to go in and find them.
So when they get a list from you of names, they can be sure that, you know, it's not 50 names of which 40 are no good?
No.
We don't know.
No, we don't have.
What do you mean you don't know?
Wait, when you say no good, what do you mean by that?
They're not the right kind of people.
Oh, no, that's not it.
No, I mean, we don't get 100%, but, you know, we certainly are in the A range, 93 to 100%.
Yeah, 93 to 100%. I thought as far as interest.
I mean, that's my feedback.
Absolutely.
So if you and we do occasionally get 100% right.
Okay, and do people come back to you sometimes and say these four names are not people who are in this, I want a refund on those people?
Once in a while, somebody will say, this person isn't in the right group. You know, occasionally that'll happen. We will either give them a refund or we will give them another name. We will credit them however they want to handle that.
Okay.
And remember, we're doing this work before we're being paid for this work.
Right.
Right. You ever get stiffed?
I've been stiffed, yes.
Uh-huh. Should I ask what you do?
It didn't happen in the early years, but it has happened in the last couple years. And I think there's a couple reasons for it. One, the economy, but two, our customer base has grown quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say stiffed, it's not a large dollar volume, but it's more than I would like to see.
Okay. And you don't actually, when someone stiffs you, you don't discuss that company on your blog to shame them?
No.
No.
That's what I would do.
No, and here's the interesting thing. When they stiff us, they don't say, oh, your names were bad, you know, the work was lousy. They don't say things like that. They just disappear or, you know, stop communicating and, you know, it's unfortunate, but
mm-hmm. You should actually go, unless they're sole practitioners, you should source all the people who work for them and put the names on the Internet.
Well, there's a school of thought that would encourage
that's what
that
Dave Perry did.
David Perry, whom
I spoke to this morning, the Guerrilla Marketing for Job Hunters,
mm-hmm.
He discussed it in your group, quite frankly. I found it there. I posted it on recruiting.com a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was a major stiff, big money.
Wow.
For a major effort on his part, not name sourcing, full placement. And they refused to pay him. He sourced everybody in the company, and he says, place them.
Oh, wow.
You know why they refused to pay him? It's usually for no good reason.
No good reason.
Yeah,
there's a guy, he's very sincere.
Exactly.
I can tell, very honest and honorable person.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Can I speak?
Yes, sure. That's Sam Medalli, right?
Yeah, it's Sam. I just want to say there's a service that if you get stiffed, they'll put a red flag by the person's website saying, I got ripped off.
Wow.
And then you can click and you can read the story about how you were ripped off by this particular company.
I've never heard of that, Sam.
I'll never forget the name of the person who has this service because I'm going to use it probably sometime in my life.
Do tell. What is it?
I will, but...
all you have to do is look up... Ann Albright, Albright, and there's a customer that got stiffed by this law firm. And
A law firm did this?
Yeah.
Cool.
Where they charge, you know, like $400 as an analysis to see whether they're going to take your case. And then they never got back in touch. And she called and she wanted to get her money back and no one was talking to her. So they got this service, and it was wonderful.
Wow.
You know what? I can't understand how it works, but I was going to mention something that J.D. Jason Davis sent me a message about on the Messenger. He had an article about that on the FordyceLetter.com. I think the guy's name is Greg Allen, a lawyer who tells you what to do. And there was a very great title for the article. I think it was called... F you, Mr. Recruiter Money. How to get that money back. The F you, Mr. Recruiter.
Well, you
money.
Know what we have done? We have gone to collection agencies in the last year or so, and it's very effective in collecting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but, you know, we let it go on probably far too long. You know, we'll put up with it 4 to 6 months before it goes to collections.
Yeah, the article on the Fordyce Letter is called A Little Less Conversation, A Little More Action. Please.
Okay.
By
yeah.
Jason Davis. Okay,
like
so the other question, thank you, Sam. The other question I had was when you're doing your profiles, how long do they take? You said a dozen questions.
A typical profile usually takes 10 to 15 minutes.
That's all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 10 to 15
Pam, minutes. You agree?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
But there's a caveat. It's hard, you might
it's
have
hard
to call
to
that person 3, 4, 6, 10 times to get them to answer the phone because we don't leave messages.
No.
We want to catch that person at their desk.
Really? Even for profiles? You don't
yes.
have messages?
No. We want to catch them at their desk.
That's almost
that
impossible.
Element. What?
I'd say that's almost impossible these days.
Well, when 8 out of 10 of calls go to voicemail these days, yeah, it is. It's not
yeah,
easy.
Yeah, you know, you want to get someone at the desk, you call them Christmas Eve.
I have a job right now that consists of 330 names where we're profiling. Now, that has a good chance of maybe generating 10, 12 profiles a day.
That's a quant job?
No, this is a different job. It's an analyst job. But that's a lot of names, 330 names.
Can you run some of those questions? I know you do profiling. Can I ask you to run some of the questions, typical questions, bias?
Where did you work before? Can you tell us a little bit about your previous experience? What are you working on now? Sometimes that's sensitive information. They don't want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever managed people? If it's a sales job, do you have a sales quota? Did you reach it? You know, what bonus? You know, that kind of stuff.
What else?
Marketing, we might ask them, were you ever involved in any major marketing campaigns, releases? It depends on what the job title is. The questions are customed.
Well, there must be some standard things. Pam mentioned education, right?
Education, yes. Education.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, you didn't chime in on the show. Maybe I didn't give you a chance, Maureen. But, essentially, to get those questions out of the person, you have to establish rapport very quickly. Am I right? Yes or no?
You do.
How do you do that?
This is Maureen Sherub calling. I'm calling you on behalf of whatever company it is that has hired us to do this. They have an opportunity that they've identified you as a possible someone they're interested in, maybe helping them let me start over. I'm starting to fumble. You put me on the spot. But they think that maybe you can help take them to the next level. Do you have a few minutes to spend a little time with me so we can get to know each other a little more? Well, I'm not looking for a job. They understand you're not looking for a job, but they have identified you as someone that might be able to help them either fill this position, at that point, either fill that position or might maybe have an interest in this position. The yada, yada, you never know what the future holds. It just depends on the cues you get back from the person on the other end of the line. Within a few seconds how receptive this person is.
Okay, I'm surprised that is a very bland, kind of vanilla,
mm-hmm.
Straightforward statement. And how often do you manage to get information from people?
If we get them on the phone, we will get their profiles on that call about a third of the time.
That's all?
About a third of the time, if we get them on the phone. About another third of the time, they'll say, well, now's not really a good time. My boss is sitting next to me, or, something like that. And we'll say, would it be more convenient if we called you this evening at home? And in that case, if we go into that default mode, we control the conversation. We don't allow them to call us. We set a time. I will call you this evening at 7 p.m. at, their home phone number. We get that information from them. That's part of the profile, usually, one of the questions they want to see answered. And then we call them at 7 o'clock that evening at home.
Well,
and about a third of the time, they'll say, no, I'm not really interested, or we won't be able to get hold of them.
Okay, so you two-thirds of the time, 66%, you get the information, right?
Yeah, I would say, on an average profile.
Okay,
though,
but you know what? You're including like one-third of those people are people you just don't get in touch with. Of the people you actually talk to, what percentage do you get the information from?
Between 50 and 75% of the time, depending on what it is we're profiling for. Like sales, if it's a sales job, you'll get more profiles than you will for and IC design engineering.
Why? They don't want to talk?
Exactly. Well, most of them don't want to talk or they're not interested. Or for instance, a design position, you'll get very few profiles out of design people or defense people. They don't want to talk. They're weird. They're, paranoid. They can't say anything, that kind of thing.
Well, and the other part of it is that sometimes if they ask who the company or who this is on behalf of, if that information is provided, they make a decision right then and there. No, thank you.
It happens.
Okay.
If a company, like what happened to you, that company was being purchased, if that company has some bad press going on about it, but we don't often butt heads with that kind of problem.
Okay, Maureen.
Yes.
I have to, Pam. So, Pam, let me go back to what Maureen was saying. Is that okay?
Sure.
Now, so she's saying that she essentially builds all the rapport she needs with just a very straightforward, nothing special, no razzle-dazzle, no razzmatazz, no sizzle presentation.
Because 9 times out of 10, razzle-dazzle, believe it or not, it makes people nervous.
It turns them off.
Right, and they can hear it. They can hear the straightforwardness of it. It's a simple thing. I mean, there's no guessing. There's no... you know, worrying. There's no paranoia. I mean, people, honestly, they can hear the straightforwardness of you know, what you're trying to accomplish.
Your voice is so important.
Right. And it's not about razzle or dazzle or even making them nervous. And people pretty much can, they pretty much make up their minds within the first 5 seconds. Okay, is this person shooting straight or not shooting straight? I'm either going to answer or I'm not going to answer. There's no selling here. There's no pushing here. It's very straightforward, and they have, you know, and they don't have to guess or process the information.
Okay, now Maureen has been a salesperson. I don't know if Pam ever has, but you might make a good salesperson. I don't know.
I have.
You have. Okay, so let's say that you were making the follow-up call as well. Let's say you guys were working as a tag team. One of you was doing the initial call and just passing it over to the other. So let's say both Pam.
Okay,
and
why
Maureen.
Would we be passing over to the other?
Well,
for what reason?
Maureen, you. I don't know why, but okay. All I'm really trying to get at is.
See, here's the difference. Here's the difference in our call too, and this is the other thing we convey. We are not the recruiter. We are not the hiring manager.
But we will
that?
Put you in touch with the hiring manager
if you
have
want
questions.
Us to.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but let's say you were a recruiter following up, taking the recruiting call. Would it be different?
I have no idea. I've never been on that end of it.
But you've been a salesperson.
I've been a salesperson. There's a difference, you know. I mean, I think when you're a salesperson, anything in sales is, it's, you know, you, there's several different psychologies to sale, to selling. One is if you have a customer that walks through the door and knows exactly what they want to buy, that's an easy sell, okay? If you have a customer who's not quite sure they want to buy, but they think they want to buy this, then it's your job to fill in the rest of the information as credibly as you can. You know, you have to establish credibility. And then you have to read, then there's the third and fourth kind of clock. You know, once you've given the information, you either realize, leave this person alone to make the final decision on their own, or then there's the fourth person who that you kind of get a sense of, and this is if you're very experienced, they want me to push them to spend this money.
Okay. Maureen, do you want to take up what Pam has just said and translate it into recruiting?
Well, I don't know. You know, of course, it depends. You know, the success of that second call wholly depends on that on the recruiter's skill set.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't know what those are.
Sam, you want to comment here?
I think the most important thing I can tell you in from sales of any kind, I don't like arrogance, and that's a personal thing.
You know, Michael, when somebody calls you, and you know within a few seconds if you have a trick bag on the other end of the phone, don't you?
A trick bag? I've never heard that, but
yeah.
I understand what you're saying. But I'm
yeah.
just wondering, since we were talking about making these irresistible offers, engaging people quickly,
right.
You guys are doing nothing special. You're being, in fact, as bland and as neutral as possible, it sounds like to me.
I agree.
And
I think that's important. I think that
I do too.
Speaks to transparency.
Okay, and you're actually saying that I...
At this level, at this first, at this tenuous first touch.
Yeah, you're saying I'm not attached. You want to talk to me? Fine. If you don't want to talk to me,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to twist your arm.
Correct.
Exactly.
We're not
okay.
invested. Mm-hmm.
But Maureen, you are from an entrepreneurial family. You have the sales background yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine if you really wanted to land a candidate out of the people you've talked to, would you use the same kind of gentle approach or would you use some other technique?
Okay, but you're missing the most key important element. We are dealing with what we keep calling the passive candidate.
The truly
we are taking them
candidate.
By surprise. We're calling them. They didn't reach out to us.
Pam, I think what he's saying is, one of our customers will call up and they'll say, you know, one of these guys you identified, he looks really great. Can you get him on the line? Would you call him, profile him?
Sure.
We're really interested in him. And,
right.
And our answer to that is what? Sure, we'll do that.
Sure.
I don't think our approach really changes that much.
No,
right?
Because...
If at all.
Because we don't want to make anybody nervous straight out of the gate. Again, we're calling them and contacting them by surprise.
Okay. Well, there's a whole idea that recruiting is selling, that in the future... All the names will be available to anybody via the internet.
It is selling, but I think one of the most effective ways to sell is transparency.
Right.
Well, transparency, okay, but the point is you can be transparent and you can be telling them your ideas of why they should take this job.
No,
or at least
we don't.
Consider it.
We don't
do that.
No, you don't, but should someone else be doing that? What are selling techniques, if any, that should be applied to these people once there at the next stage? Or should it just continue to be very gentle, neutral, this is what we've got, would you be interested?
At our stage, yes.
At our stage,
what about
yes.
The next
at the
stage?
Recruiter stage, if you think that this candidate is the best thing since sliced bread, I think you got to do whatever you got to do to convey
remember,
that message.
Remember, you've got some inside information in front of you that we've obtained for you, so you may be salivating over what you're seeing on the profile.
Right.
Yeah, am I talking the wrong language here? You guys, that's beyond your level. That's what I'm going to understand it
that,
to be. You don't want to comment
call?
On how a recruiter
yeah.
should sell the position to the candidates you've identified and pre-screened. Am
Everybody
I right?
has different ideas on that.
Okay,
right.
And you don't have any.
Well, we did. We just told you, but you didn't like them.
I didn't hear them.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, we've got
I'm
5
sorry,
minutes
Michael,
left.
We
Is
did
there anything
you.
Else? This has been a very interesting discussion, I think. Anything else you'd like to discuss in the remaining minutes?
Somebody called. Let me talk to Pam for a minute. Pam, somebody called. Remember those names we passed last night? We sent
yes.
over on the SAP job.
Yes.
Well, they called and they couldn't find one of the person. They called the company and the company said that person's not in our directory. So she called me and she was kind of perturbed that the company that person wasn't in the company. I said, I'll call you right back. So I get on the horn, right, and I call the company and I said to the receptionist, can you please give me a direct dial for? I gave her the name. And she says, the only person, I don't have a person named Abigail in my directory. I have a Robert, and he's in Texas. And I said, no, I know she's there, and she works for, and I gave her the name of the manager that she works under, because remember, you got the manager and then the 5 or so reports.
Yeah.
And sure enough, she was able to pull up the manager, and sure enough, there was Abigail listed underneath her, and she goes, that's odd. She's not in my directory, but there she is. So I got the direct dial, and I called the woman back and gave her the number. But that's a lesson. That's a telephone sourcing lesson.
Right.
That you can't rely on those receptionists.
No.
When you call and you ask for somebody and they say they're not in my directory, that doesn't always mean they're not in their directory.
Correct. Just means they may not have the most up-to-date list or directory that's been entered into their system.
So you have to help her help you, and whatever information you can help her with to help you further, help her along.
Well, how did you guys, let me ask, identify Abigail then if the receptionist didn't have her on the directory?
I called the manager.
The manager gave you his or her staff?
Correct.
Okay. Want to say, what was the approach that you used?
I plead the fifth on that.
Okay. Okay, you can sit on that one. Anything else we should discuss? 2 minutes left.
I think we should discuss the difficulty of that job. We're looking for what, SAP?
Yeah, SAP.
Specific.
This is
your verticals of SAP implementation.
Right.
You'll take on
any numerous IT divisions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You'll take on any search. You don't say, no, that's beyond me.
We don't
take
really
on
know
any
it's beyond
search.
It until we're in it.
What, Pam?
We don't really know it's beyond our beyond
exactly.
our limits.
Exactly. We'll take on any
it.
Search, but if we get into it and we just, you know, we're really facing headwind, we'll give it up. But do we ever give it up, Pam? We really don't.
No, we really don't unless we absolutely got completely misguided directions from the original, you know.
Yeah, that's always a problem.
That happens, too.
Well, you know, one last thing that I'll say.
Okay, go ahead.
It must be frustrating when, you know, some names must take 10 times as much time.
They do. Sometimes they do. For instance, this SAP job is taking 10 times what some other jobs would take. It's a time issue. But and why do we do that? Is that your next question?
Yeah.
Because we get better.
Yeah,
when
we do
the
better.
Hard stuff, we really get a lot better.
So you're being paid to train, in other words.
Yeah, in a sense. It's kind of like continuing education for us.
Now,
it's really
like
honing
say,
more search skills. It really
is. I'd like to tell, I'm going to comment, I thought my animal panel today, no reflection on the actual people, but I thought it was a bit on the mediocre side, but I think this is an excellent show that we just had. The time flew, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Okay, so I'd like you two girls, ladies, to remind me. I'm going to try to block this show off and post it as a separate posting so people can access it without having to fast forward through the Recruiting Animal show. That's it for today.
Thank
See you in
you.
2 weeks' time.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's it.